Today's guest in the studio with us is my sister, my baby sister, Sarah Spaulding. Sarah has, she was a D1 soccer player and ended up having a couple of knee surgeries and whatnot throughout that. And once she couldn't play soccer anymore towards the back half of her career, she ended up dropping out of college just before, not too long before graduation. But she really focused on getting her sales skills up. She was in multiple direct sales companies and is now actually she drives sales of over $2 million a month in a company called Make Wellness, which is an affiliate marketing program with peptides as its featured product. And she takes substantial portions of the income that she makes in her day-to-day job and gets it working for her passively in real estate investments. And so I'm really excited to have my baby sister on the podcast today. All right. Well, thanks for coming and joining us on the podcast today, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, bro.
This is my sister, my baby sister on the podcast.
Yep, baby sister.
What's it like losing your income a couple times as an independent contractor?
One time it happened, and then the second I chose to let it go.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, all right, the first time, what was that like?
Well, you know.
Oh, I know.
But we'll both talk about it. Yeah, the first time it was definitely a shocker. Because I thought that company was going to be
all about this show's all about like successful people and how, you know, mm-hmm. obviously successful people obviously have times of turmoil or things to overcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one that sticks out in my mind. And so I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not expecting that question right out of the gate. I love it. Let's get into it.
I didn't know it was coming. We're not messing
this around. This is great. Yeah. So, gosh, that was 2019. So we built that first company for about 8.5 years or so. Started when I was 18. And so I thought that I would do that company forever. You know, we were very loyal to that company. It was basically our vehicle to put into our real estate. It's what kind of got you, well, all of us going. And I didn't really know what I was going to fully do from there on out. And I'm really glad I gave another opportunity to look and, you know, went to the top to that company in I was there for about 5 years. So it took me about a year to do, what took me 8 years to do in our first company. Can I say it? Just say it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we did AdvoCare. So that first company, so we built that 8.5 years. My second company, that took me less than a year to replace that income. And, you know, I was able to do what I love to do, which is helping people at a much greater scale. And the second time around, though, I chose to leave a six-figure income to be part of a company launch. And here I am today. So
with the first, you know, losing a full-time income as an independent contractor, what was the first, how long did it take you to do the first thing that you did after to rebound? And what was the first
that
thing?
Income?
What was the first thing
that
you did
and how long? Did.
Yeah. What was your first action item and how quickly did you take
that's
action
a great
on
question.
It?
So while a lot of people, when they go through hard times or turmoil, they kind of act out or make impulsive decisions. I kind of sat. A lot of people were trying to poach people and you really saw the worst.
And for everyone listening, it was a direct sales company. AdvoCare is a direct sales company.
Exactly.
So we were independent contractors, you know, moving the company.
So I kind of sat still for a little bit and I knew there were companies I did not want to go to. I wanted to be part of something that was unique and different. And so I seeked counsel in that hard time. So I seek some advice from people that I really looked up to, successful people that I've always looked up to and kind of, I don't want to say I fully trusted, but I wanted to see what other people were doing. And then once I was ready, I looked at an opportunity that was, you know, brought across my desk and I was blown away by it. Never heard of the company, was really impressed. You know, heard from the CEO, one of the top earners of the company, and I couldn't believe it, but I got pretty excited about it rather quickly, you know, even though I was pretty like confused and sad and, you know, especially when you think you're going to be building something alongside of what you're doing and, you know, it's going to be a part of you forever. Like that company was around. So AdvoCare was around, we got in year 20, built it for 8 years and then it went under, it wouldn't go under, it shifted to that affiliate model, which you guys don't know in the direct sales industry, a lot of these companies end up shifting to that affiliate model, meaning they take away the team building side, the multi-level marketing part of it. And that's what happened to us. So my brother and I, we lost 90% of our income pretty much overnight. And so I knew that I loved doing that. But once I really looked at this one specific opportunity, vetted it out, I knew I was going to go all in. And so I chose to go all in.
Yeah.
So.
And I know for me, I remember when that call came, I was like, I'd been the person like forever, you know, like I was always talking about what I was doing with my income mm-hmm. along the way and why I always talked about why I was doing AdvoCare and that I wasn't just doing it for to do AvoCare. And yep. It's not something I wanted to do for life. I knew at some point that income was going to go away. Now, mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be like 10 or 15 or 20 years after when it actually did. But yeah. I was waiting for it. I knew it was going to happen. So any dollar that I made, I was very different than most of the people in that company. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people in that company that were making 20 grand, 50 grand, 30 grand, 12 grand a month, whatever, they would just spend more as they made mm-hmm. more. And right. I saved every penny that I could that didn't go to taxes went into buying multifamily real estate because I knew that it was just going to go away at some point. I read all the documents and disclosures that we were independent contractors and the company as the owners of that company had all the rights to do at any time. They could choose to change their business plan.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, and I've chosen to change my business plan in real estate before and it's impacted right. other people, but that's when you're an independent contractor, you don't own, they, you know, these companies a lot of times will tell you that you own your own business and whatever. And it's like, well, not really. Cause you are an independent contractor yep. and anytime they can choose to go a different route and they have yep. every right to. And so I was never mad at AvoCare. There was a lot mm-hmm. of people like pissed off. I'm like, I'm not mad. Like I knew it was coming, you know? And so I think anytime that you have a sales role, and if it's not a company that you truly own shares in and have a substantial portion of the equity, you should always bank on that income stream going away at some point. Mm-hmm. And you should take all the money that you earn, save it up, and invest it into something that pays you passively, that you're going to be paid while you don't have to actively go do anything. And that was something that a lot of people didn't do because they were scared that, oh, I'm going to make the wrong investment or, you know, whatever. Well, what happens when that income's gone and you didn't do anything to proactively replace it? By the time AvoCare was done, it was paying me somewhere between, depending on the month. At the height, I think AvoCare paid me like 12 grand a month. But like towards the end there, I'd already started to phase out a little bit and just not do as much with it because of the real estate business that I was building. But it was still paying me between $3,500 and $7,500 a month, which is substantial income. But like when it went away, I didn't have any fear in the world because I'd already replaced that multiple times over from the earnings that I made in that company now working in investments.
Well, we were probably one of the very few that had investments, you know?
Right.
So there was that in the back of my mind. Like, thank God we had started investing the money. Cause at that point we had been seven, 8 years into Spalding Group. Investing that money.
I'd made my first investment 6 years prior,
but definitely part of the plan because it actually back then I didn't see the writing on the wall as much. There definitely was signs, I think. And so it prepared me for this next journey and season of my life because I saw the writing on the wall at my last, you know, company I was at. And a lot of people didn't see it and were being lied to, manipulated. And so I took that and gathered that information and made a decision. And I'm really glad that I left because a year almost, just less than a year later, they closed their doors.
Right.
And now, you know, here I am earning 10 times the income, helping 10 times the amount of people. And you know, we kind of left on the lifeboats from the sinking ship is kind of how I view it.
Are you able to share how much in sales your organization does
each month
or year?
Yeah. So we're doing 2 million a month in volume. So that's, you know, that's 24 million a year, which when you really think about that, it's a lot of products being sold and people being helped. And my biggest sales month, revenue month, my former company was close to 600,000. And that was after years of being there. Mm-hmm. So even in our first month, I think we did just over 2.5 million, but that was more of like a launch month. But outside of that, though, we are just continuing to grow or just really scratching the surface with it. And so that's also too, just kind of being in these two first companies and joining one company year 20, doing decent, and then joining my second company year eight of that company. Now here I am, you know, helping launch a company that's really making history. And I wouldn't probably have seen that opportunity if I hadn't been through what I went through.
So what's the difference between someone that sells $20,000 a month versus someone who sells $200,000 a month versus someone who sells $2 million a month? What is the difference in those people's actions, mindset? What separates those three categories?
So with my organization, I definitely have more of a leadership role. You know, I bring people into the business that I know can really monetize their platforms. They want to diversify their income. That's what I'm really good at. And I also mentor a lot of people. So you have those types of people that are more of like the builders and they bring those people in. And yes, of course I sell the product, but that's where I make 95% of my income, you know, is bringing in networks, tapping into other people's networks and blessing people with the opportunity. And then we have that other part of the business model where there are people that come in and, you know, there's people selling 50,000 in their own personal sales, 100,000 if it's over 50,000, they're making 40% of that sale, of those sales. So I'm more so tapping into the residual income side of things. And I definitely provide a lot more leverage for myself, you know, as I keep building and helping people. You know, I mean, my business is always running. The business is always running, right? There's always products being sold, people signing up. So that's, there's two kind of differences there. And there are actually some people that are really good with, if you want to call it team building, the team building side, and they also are really good at their own personal sales, and they'll just make, you know, even more money. They're kind of tapping into the two engines.
Well,
if you
more
want to call
money
it.
On a percentage of each dollar, but not necessarily more money.
If they're doing a lot more in their own personal sales, they'll make significantly more, you know, on top of the team building side and, you know,
so,
bringing in.
So what's the difference in mindset that you have?
Yeah.
So someone that does $20,000 a month volume or revenue, $20,000
yeah,
a month
okay.
volume.
Yep.
To someone that does $200,000 a month volume, to then again, someone that does $2 million a month volume. Mm-hmm. What is the difference in like mindset, the type of person, the day to day? Because again, that's three different, like you're 10X in each time, right?
Right.
So $20,000 a month volume, $200,000 a month volume, $2 million a month volume.
There's a lot of answers I feel like I could share with that. I would say the main contributor to people really like just really growing and, you know, doing what I'm doing, it's a mentality of first off, you can't have, here, we're gonna have to cut this part out. I'm drawing a blank.
You're fine.
I don't want to like bash anybody. Like, I don't want anybody. I'm trying to think of my team's going to listen.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this.
It's not really bashing.
No, it's not bashing. But I just want to make sure I say it right. Dealing with a lot more people, I don't want to have to have.
Well, yeah. But if someone's truly doing 20,000, and they're sitting here like, well, how do I do 200,000?
I mean, right. That's the thing. Like, it depends on what. Okay. It's like, what do they want to get out of it?
Yeah. What they want to get out of it?
Yeah. It's not his.
No.
Okay.
And I mean, sometimes you have to have people square between the eyes, because like if they want, you know,
yeah,
like,
right. No,
there's
agree.
Some people that do $20,000 a month volume, but that's all they want to do. That's
exactly.
Fine. There's nothing wrong with
yes.
that.
Yes.
And it could be they're doing 20,000, but they've been here for a month.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's you know, right. I mean, there's a time right. factor. Yes. Like you, where you are at and the success you were having 24 months ago, how different are you compared to where you are right now? Is it that drastic of a difference?
Yeah. I get it. You don't want to slam Joel.
Or you, I'm okay with it. It's my life story, man. totally used to it. Or is it a opportunity situation? You know what I mean? Because are you 10X what you were as a person and as a leader 24 months ago than you are now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So do you want me to start?
Well, we're probably not cutting anything.
I'm not cutting anything.
I think it worked good.
Okay. I mean, I we tried to reframe.
This might be my first time like not knowing an answer on a podcast.
Dude, yeah. No, we let her rip.
I know. Okay. So first off, it's just a go-getter mentality. You know, there's highs and lows that people deal with, and a lot of people make excuses and they really, I really just believe it's just a go-getter mentality. Like you have to work your butt off. You can't let the little things get in your way. And it's not easy. Like anything great having in life, anything that is going to change your life, it's going to be hard. And that's why a lot of people don't do it. They don't have, they don't have either the discipline, they don't have the vision for it. So that's why I spend a lot of time mentoring people, especially the ones that, you know, seek me out and have the potential. You know, we really get in the trenches with them, and I ask those hard questions and what they really want from this. And so I'd say it's the go-getter mentality, having a vision of why you're really doing it. You know, it's not just, I want to make some side money. Like I want this to change the trajectory of my life. And I will say I'm really good at helping set that path for people that really want it. You know, I'm really good at meeting them in the middle, getting in the trenches, like I said, with them and helping them achieve those goals, reverse engineer those goals. But I'd say the ones that don't really grow over time are just the ones that either settle, they don't have that go-getter mentality, like I can do it, I believe in myself, and they don't have the vision.
Yeah.
So there's multiple things that go into it. And also where I'm at today, you know, Joel kind of mentioned it. I mean, it's over 13 years in the making. So I've built my credibility. I built my influence over time. And it's not really always about like what company you're at and the product. It's about your influence and people wanting to be part of what you're doing and where you're going. So as a leader and as a person in this industry, or a leader and a rep in this industry, you have to also know where you're going for people to follow you.
Yeah. The biggest thing when this was my main thing, the biggest thing I saw is so many people would get amped up about what they ultimately wanted. Right. But then they'd give it like 2 weeks and they got four no's. And it's like they would just fizzle away. And it's like, well, yeah, you weren't meant to have the success that you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You thought you wanted it. Maybe you did want it, but you didn't really, really want it.
And honestly, it isn't the person that could handle the success if they got it.
Amen.
Right.
Yep. You know, sure. I mean, they turn sure. around
there's
and probably
a lot
end
that
up
comes
in a worse
there's
situation.
There's a lot that comes with 2,000 apartments. I promise you that.
Exactly right.
And some of the stuff I don't want to have to deal with every freaking day, but it's a part of it.
People would not be able to handle what I have to handle every day with the people that I work with. And so, you know, that's a whole nother thing too.
But it's also that is such a short time period of 2 weeks or a month. And like that hockey stick, you don't see that hockey stick unless you're zoomed out over a 3 year, 5 year, 10 year period.
Right.
Right. Cause even, and the crazy thing is even a 10 year period doesn't look like a hockey stick. That portion won't look like a hockey stick anymore. Once there's another 20 or 30 years, right. Cause now you're looking at 20 or 30 years and now like that hockey stick growth of where you were at, that initial 10 years is like a flat line basically, right? In all perspective. Like if I look at my net worth on a 15 year, it's a hockey stick.
Right.
Right. But when I just look at, and I keep that 15 year outlook and I look at the first 4 years, it's pretty flat from that vantage point. But if I go back and just look at the 4 years and that's the only thing left on the graph, that 4 years is a hockey stick.
Sure.
Oh, right. Yeah. So you're looking, your perspective is also wrong and you need, it's the wrong perspective and you don't give it the time. It's obviously the effort that needs to be duplicated over time to accomplish it. But a lot of people don't give the effort or the time. And some people give a lot of effort right out of the gate. But like, that's the effort you need. Like you have to get kicked in the mouth, in the face.
Yep.
For a long period of time sometimes. And long is, it depends on how, I mean, that's very objective as well, because it's like, wait, objective or subjective? What's the opinion one?
Subjective.
It's very subjective as well, because, you know, I mean, I'm like, man, I can put up with a lot of pain for 5, 6, 7 years ago, because I did through real estate, right? There's some people like, I couldn't do what you do for 7 days. Well, that's a problem. Then you're not going to have the same result unless you are very, 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 very lucky somehow and win a lottery.
Right. Well,
I was just saying, but again, look at how most of them turn out.
Yeah, right. When I would say my perspective is a little bit different too, because
it's not good or bad.
Yeah,
correct. Right.
I'm not saying it's good or bad. Right. It's just saying if you're complaining about the result you're not getting, look at some of these things that we're talking about here, because that's probably a good reason why.
Right.
Well, my perspective too is it's really simple what we do. I'm not ever going to tell anybody it's easy, but most companies, most business, for people to earn what I earn, I mean, what you'd have to do in an actual business, it would take most likely years and a lot of expenses. I mean, you know, we grew up in an entrepreneur family, so we're a little aware of this, like dad built an incredible company. And so all we really have to do here is impact people, serve people, and the company does the rest. And so I do like that a lot. It is the cash cow. It really is if you do it right. And so if you have that mindset of, hey, I'm going to go help people, it's not just about you. It's not just about what, you know, you're setting out to do. It's also about helping others. And I think that takes some people a while, because they're just focused on what they want to earn, but they forget, like, well, they don't even know that it's about other people. Like, how many people did you help along the journey, even in AvoCare?
Yep.
You know, we were helping a lot of people. So that's part of it too. And then I do set an expectation when I'm helping people. It's like, hey, you know, you're going to be putting effort into this business these first couple of weeks, these first few months, these first few years. You might not always see that money. You're not going to see that money come in right away. This is not a job. You're not trading hours for dollars. But what you're doing now, if you stick and stay, if you be consistent, that will eventually grow and compound, and you're going to keep making money from the work that you did in the past. So I do like to set that expectation, because it's not a job, right?
About real estate all the time. I've mentioned this a little bit, but like in real estate, if you get 60 properties, I'm like, I got 60 properties on average, you know, a lot of times those are 5-year term loans. Right. So how many months are over 5 years? 60. Right. So that means on average, you're going to refinance or sell. Because when your loan is done, it's called the end of the term, right? And the term, it goes to maturity, so you have to pay off that loan. So that means you're either refinancing or selling. Well, when you refinance, a lot of times you're able to pull. I mean, there's been refinance deals where we've pulled $75,000 in smaller deals. There's been refinance deals where we've pulled, you know, $3, $4, $5 million out, right? Well, if you get to the point where you have 60 properties, on average, you're going to have one refinance event every month. Right. So you're getting paid for the stuff that you did a long time ago. It's another example of how you're getting paid for the stuff that you're doing today. You're not necessarily getting paid today on it, but you're going to get paid a lot, because those properties cash flow, you know, monthly. But then on top of that, you get a bigger check.
Right.
Whenever you refinance. Right. And so if you have five properties, okay, well, because that's more manageable for some people to think about. Okay. Well, once every year, you're going to have a property. You're going to have once every 12 months on average, you're going to have a property that needs to be refinanced, which is where you're getting a bigger chunk. Right. And what I do with the bigger chunk is I always reinvest it.
Right.
But just another way that I like to think of, okay, like I'm not necessarily getting paid for what I'm doing today. Everything. And again, going back to that net worth statement, like if it's graphed out, everything that I did, the beginning portion of that on the left, lower left quadrant, right? It took like the stuff that I do now, I'm not getting paid for 18 to 24 months at least.
Sure. Yep.
Usually. Mm-hmm. Now, with the speed, and we've shared this on other podcasts and stuff, and some of the speed that we're getting and how fast we're turning around some of these properties, we're like, it's only taking us 6, 8, 10 months. Now, some of that, it's compressing a little bit, but it's taking a lot of time and experience to get to that point to compress it that much. But you're still, it's everything that you're doing now. When the biggest checks that you can get is if you're going to not get paid today for what you're doing and take it on the back end. Yep. That's the biggest checks that right. you're going to ever be able to get.
Yep. Well, even just what I did my former company, a lot of people watched what I did and they wanted to be a part of it. And so when they saw me leave and resign, I think it attracted a lot of people to me. Naturally, they wanted to do business with me and have me helping them along the way. So again, even just what I did back then in 2020, 2021, I'm even seeing the harvest now in this new company from that as well. So
what have you learned about being a high income earner? What have you learned about taxes? What have you had to do differently, you know, as like your income grew a lot? And
I would definitely say just even from that first company and seeing so many people lose everything that they built, not being super educated with their finances and taking care of, you know, being a good steward of their income. I think that has helped me a lot, obviously, too, with, you know, you and our family. But we keep track of everything. You know, I have a separate business card, just the basics, right? But separate business card, which I have had for years. We have a whole accounting, you know, financing thing we do every single month. I keep my receipts, the basics. I'm obviously careful with, you know, spending our money, right? Like, but we also don't want a bunch of cash sitting in the bank. We want to keep putting that into real estate. So just being a good steward of it, tracking it, being on top of it, you know, being in touch with our tax person. That's really important. But I wouldn't say I have learned anything.
Well, like as you've made more money each month or whatnot, like, again, you're not.
Yeah.
When you're 1099 income, you don't have any withholding, right? So normal people that are employed, W-2, they have a withholding. So if right. someone's a W-2 employee and they make $20,000 a month or $10,000 a month or $3,000 a month, there's a withholding that comes out of that. Yep. They don't have to worry about coming up with money for taxes. Mm-hmm. So have you had to change how you do things knowing that you have a tax bill
at the end of the year? A little bit. Just again, I think with our money market that we have, I think we're just more on top of it than we probably ever have been. But I'll give myself some kudos because we've been pretty good with it the past, you know, couple of years. Especially when I started earning six figures with this and then now, you know, being a seven figure earner. But yeah, definitely setting more money aside. And then we're actually looking at possibly hiring somebody to even help us stay more on top of it, like an accountant of some sort, kind of vetting out some different people. But outside of that, you know, just being a good steward of the money. Right. And then we're not in this mindset of, oh my God, we're making all this money. Woo. It's okay. How can we put this money to work? Mm-hmm. And so we've, you know, put some money to work already these past few weeks, past few months, and obviously more deals coming up that we want to put the money into. Because again, I have that in the back of my head, like this won't always be around. Now with, you know, knowing the founder and the founders of the company, I really believe, you know, in my heart of hearts that this will be around for 30 to 40 years, but at least a couple decades. It is. At least 15 to 20, you know, at least. And so if I can max out this, help as many people as possible and use this vehicle to continue to invest in real estate, and you know, it's nowhere but up from here. So,
yeah. I mean, 20 to 30 years is a pretty good run for just traditional business.
True.
Let alone in this space. It's tough, you know. The industry promotes it as passive income, earn passive income. Man, it's just not.
Yeah,
it's just not. You know, compounded income, I think is way more accurate. Mm-hmm. And then you're utilizing that tool and in your income to create passive income assets. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you can bridge that gap.
Yes.
Again, you know, nobody, we don't know what's going to happen in the market. We don't know what's going to happen in the industry. We don't know what who knows, mm-hmm. is going to trigger something that's like all of a sudden it just totally changes the game on us.
Yeah. When people ask me that question, I usually say, you know, at least 15 years, maybe 10, unless there's like a crazy, you know, world event. You know, bare minimum. So it's like, why not do as much as you can do?
I tell people all the time, like, whatever you're making today, freaking
put it to work.
Yeah, that's right. Because it could be tomorrow.
Yeah, it could.
You might freaking get a call tomorrow and say it's done.
Totally. Absolutely.
Like, no matter what. I mean, and that's the thing about, again, when you get money and if you get it working for you, mm-hmm. you have that principle. Mm. That principle is mm-hmm. really not going anywhere unless you make a bad investment decision. Yeah. Right. So, like, our real estate properties, like I have so much more control over that than anything that I'd be like a 1099 person right. in. And that's the whole point in this is like you know more, you have every idea what's going on. Again, it just goes back to anything that you trade any time for, anything that your W-2 or 1099, like that should not be how you're going on a crazy vacation. That should not be how you're buying a house. That should not, it should be like the stuff that, like, it should be your passive cash flow. That's means you have principal working for you, mm-hmm. a dollar amount that's been invested and that's working for you and that's paying you. That's how you should be paying for your house payment. That's mm-hmm. how you should be paying for your crazy vacation. That's how you should be paying for if you want a Lamborghini. Like, it should be one month of cash flow, like right. you know, like right. you pay for it in cash, and that's how it should be done in my mind.
Well, we don't have a house. We don't, you know, 100%. We rent. That's another thing. Like, we could easily go buy something. Mm. And so that's something I do mentor and teach people on, like, hey, like, be a good steward of what you're doing. Like, don't just go. And I think some people that I'm with now and their former experiences, they went and spent their money, were really foolish. So guiding them with that is great too. But yeah, we don't own a house.
And obviously, like, we could have a property that goes bankrupt. Like, mm-hmm. You know, but again, I've got more insight in that, more control over that than right. I do where I'm an independent contractor right. making a big income.
Right. And I had more real estate money come in last year than I was even ever making at, you know, my first two companies, mm-hmm. which was great. So, but
what, so if, what do you have to do in your company if you want a 10x your income or 10x your volume again?
You, if you're growing and everything that you're doing is working, you have to literally go 10x that. I mean, you have to put more hours in.
Let me say it this way. How do you respond to the people that say, like, I don't know any more people to talk to?
It's pretty comical.
Cause maybe that's listening to
this, I've told you this, but, there's how many Americans first off, and then eventually we're going to go global. There's millions of people. And so when people tell me that, I'll ask them, like, okay, have you looked at your Facebook friends? Have you gone through that? Do you have a list? Have you gone through your Instagram followers? Have you looked at your phone contact list? They're like, well, no. And I'll just ask them the question. I'll straight shoot. I'm like, okay, then you have not tapped into your network at all. So you have to really put your entrepreneur cap on. That's kind of what I tell people. Put your empire building cap on. You have to really be more intentional with what you're doing. You have to be doing the money making activities, which is what I really mentor and coach people on.
What are the money making
activities? You can't just post and hope. You can't just think, oh, everything on social media, you're just going to attract everybody in your business. You have to specifically target people and recruit people. A lot of people hate that word, recruiting, but at the end of the day, you have to go and interrupt lives and target people, because one or two people that want to really run with this, blow it up, they could come in and change your business. You know, I have people that I've helped get on board and they've brought in 50 to 200,000 in revenue in 1 month, a couple months in, just by getting them on board in my business. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to be intentional with who you're bringing into the business, and you have to treat it. A lot of people don't understand this term when you really think about it, because they don't even know what it's like to, like, build a business, but you have to treat it more serious. And if you want it to pay you like a business, you got to treat it as if it was like your own business and you invested six figures, you know, and you're trying to grow it. A lot of people don't realize that, and they're just kind of like dabbling in things, you know, and they're not consistent with it.
That's part of the problem too, is it's such a low barrier of entry to get in.
Yep.
That it's like, now people aren't like, if it costs you $500, $600, $1,000, $12,000, you know, whatever. I know, you know, when I first started with Advocate, it was $3,000 and Modair was like $600.
There's no fee, but they can, like, buy product they want.
Right. But like, it's just such a low barrier that if you don't have skin in the game, you know, like, my name signed on $80 million of debt for the real estate. Right. Like I got skin in the game. I got some skin in the game that's going to keep me going even in times that I don't want to.
Well, also, let me just hit on this. A lot of these companies are dying and fizzling out. You know, at one point I thought the industry was dying. So with where we're at now, we do have a product that is pretty untapped in the marketplace. And so it's nice to have that competitive edge and a pretty unique business model. You know, it's a lot different than other business models, very futuristic. It's evolving with the time, with affiliate marketing, influencers, the way of the world, because nowadays everyone's pretty much selling something online. Remember, we're being thrown ads all the time. So it is important, like where you plant your flag, because my last company, I was still doing well, but I just noticed that people weren't growing as fast. It was harder to get started because collagen is kind of a thing of the past. There's so many collagen products out there nowadays, and peptides are the future. And so I will say it does kind of matter where you're at, actually, and having a consumable product. You know, some people sell makeup and other products, but having a consumable product that works, that's backed, that people need to reorder every 30 days is actually really important. We have like about a 70% subscription rate as a company. You don't have to check out with Subscribe and Save, but just like Amazon, all the online stores, they have Subscribe and Save. And so people are just reordering. And so that rate is actually very high for a company. So that is important too, you know.
I was on the phone with someone last week. They're like, for you to accomplish your goals in real estate or to get to 10,000, are there even 10,000 units in Wisconsin? I'm like, dude, there's real estate all over the place. He was from, I don't know, New York or something.
Yeah.
But it was just another, I automatically thought of the people that said, oh, I don't know anyone else. Like, oh, I know plenty of people that can sell me real estate yet to, even if I didn't look outside of Wisconsin, there's deals everywhere. Like I always see a new deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always see a new deal. Right. And like, the thing is if like now you're not just looking for real estate, right? Well, if I'm looking for properties that have, you know, 30 units, I mean, how many individuals are in there? Right. Cause like this type of business with direct sales, like you just need individuals to start with. So like one of my targets might have like, you know, 700 of your targets. You're trying to get it right. And so, but yeah, there's opportunity everywhere. It's just, you have to have the right mindset and the right, I think it's just positivity and viewpoint that opportunity is truly everywhere and opportunity passes us every single day.
Yeah.
Well, every 2 weeks for sure, a lifetime of opportunity, a lifetime passes our face. We just fail to recognize it so often. So just beyond the frequency where you're able to see those opportunities and then have the courage to take advantage of them. Cause then there's a lot of people that don't have the courage.
Yeah. As well. Right. And I'd say also coachability. So the most successful reps that I have, I mean, they're very coachable. I still have, you know, someone that was a 6-figure earner at our last company.
But you need to be coached by the person that's doing what you want to be doing.
Because
if you listen to me and if you listen to Dave Ramsey, you're going to be stuck in the middle. Now, if you listen to just Dave, you're probably going to have some success. If you listen to just me, you're going to have success, right? But you can't, you have to narrow. I listen to very few people. Like I hardly listen to anybody. It's almost in one ear, out the other. Because if you're not listening to the right person, then that can set you back. Or again, if you're listening to too many people, you're going to get contradicting advice when both people could be a little bit right. But if you're listening to both and it's contradicting, you're going to be stuck in the middle and now not taking any action or, you know, just
too many people listen to people that don't even have the life that they want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Go to people that have success, that have the track record, that are doing the thing. Go to them. Don't seek, you know, opinions and advice. Don't listen to those opinions and advice. There's a lot of dream killers out there. I say that all the time because they have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea.
I can't tell you how many times people have said, you're paying that much for that deal. And that was like 6 years ago. And I'd be like, yeah, this is what it's worth now.
Right.
Right.
They're like, well, man, well, now it's too expensive. No one's going to buy that from you. I'm like, yeah, there's going to be plenty of people that'll buy it from me because they understand the game and they understand that another 7 years from now, it's going to be worth 2x, 3x where it is now. And, you know,
And you were just talking about how there's opportunity everywhere and opportunity can pass you by on a constant basis. What about the people that struggle with the opposite and they're always looking at opportunity and don't put enough time and effort into the right opportunity for the right time with the right efforts to actually get the results that they want? And they'll go 3, 4, 5 years, jump. And they're just in this constant death cycle of.
Yeah. So in my industry, there's people that do multiple companies and they're trying to do all the things.
See, I think they see a mirage, not an opportunity.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. But they're never going to get good at that one. They're never, ever going to be good at that one thing.
Because I think, yeah, I think they're just trying to hop into whatever.
Yeah. Right?
And I think they see more mirages than true opportunity.
Yep.
That's what I think.
That's a good perspective. Yeah. They're just going to meet.
They see something on the horizon that they think is like a bunch of gold bars stacked and it's a mirage.
Sure. Sure.
And they just like, they see all this opportunity. They get excited about it early. Again, I think it's because after the first 2 weeks, it gets like a real thing gets freaking hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But is that a fault to the opportunity or not? Like when you say mirage, my brain goes to, oh, that opportunity wasn't what I expected it to be or wasn't. Yeah. It didn't have the right result.
Yeah.
That's not the opportunity's fault. Mm-hmm. No, because there's, I could point to a bunch of people that are having the success that you want that are in that opportunity right now. And making it work and making the income that you would like to have.
Yeah.
You're just not putting in the time, the effort, the focus, or you've got, like you said, 3-4 things going and you're trying to figure out, okay, which one,
yeah,
which
I mean,
one
is it going to be? Right. All the time, you're gonna take advantage of, people ask me all the time, you're going to take advantage of this office market crash. No,
nope.
Right. I'm honed in on what I'm doing. I'm not even, I don't even see that. I don't even see it. It's a distraction.
Right.
Right. Like it's, I don't even see it. Now it doesn't, again, it does, like you said, it doesn't mean there's not opportunity there because there for sure is. But I think the difference being if I think that's a way that people can cop out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's next versus like taking the opportunity of like talking to this individual about what you actually have already signed up for and are moving forward in it and did believe in a week ago.
Right.
And so if you already maybe got a few no's, maybe that's why they're jumping and they just keep jumping. Because again, it's the instant gratification.
They're excited about the new thing.
They
see a shiny object and they run to it. Yeah. And if they would only just focus on that one thing, oh, they'd, you know, do way better than all the dabbling.
Maybe they don't see the mirage. Maybe they do see the ultimate vision, again, 30 years down the line. But then again, they can't put the work in. And so they just keep hopping and hopping and hopping.
So, I mean, you've done real estate for how long?
13 years.
13 years.
I started learning about it in 2009. I bought my first property in 2013. So I would really consider that 17 years because like I was looking at property from 09 to 13. Right. I was, you know, learning. I was reading. I was in college. Right. I mean, 2009, I was a sophomore in college doing a lot of reading, skipping classes to read my own books. Mm-hmm. So I count that as 17.
Part of your education.
17 years.
Right. And you've been doing network marketing for 13.
They're just over 13. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I didn't finish college because of soccer and I had knee surgeries. So played D1 soccer and then had a bunch of knee injuries. And I'll say my brother was one of the very few people that supported me.
For not graduating?
Well, yeah, you were because I was building Navigator.
Really
like,
right.
I was learning more in my classes, reading Grant Cardone's books and, you know, going to these events and here I am, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, some of the most successful people, it's not, they're not the smartest person.
Right.
Mm-mm. Like no. Elon Musk, you know, literally a rocket scientist, but like, you know, I mean, well, he self-educated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not there's a lot of people that make a lot of money and get to live the life that they've always dreamt of doing the most boring business over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy that didn't go to college. He started mowing lawns. He's been on Nate Rogers. He's been on our podcast. He started mowing lawns the spring of our senior year. And everyone's like, Nate, have fun mowing lawns the rest of your life. You know, and it was kind of funny. You know, I mean, and they were all friends, right? Yeah. It's not like they were truly trying to pick them, maybe a little bit, but I don't know. But, well, it's turned into whatever they're doing, 4, 5, 6, whatever $1 million a year. And he's been doing it for, you know, he started in 08, so he's been almost doing it for 20 years now, and they've been doing so. I mean, the amount of revenue they've done in 20 years, I bet they've probably averaged $3 million. I mean, he's done $60 million of revenue from lawn mowing that turned into landscape, hardscape, and really pretty boring business, right? I mean, a business that's been around forever, not having to like reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, it's doing the little. I mean, it really is doing those things just repetitively. It's the micro decisions you make every single day over time. I think some people think, oh, like they're so successful. What are they doing that's so special?
Freaking work.
Literally doing, putting the work
courage,
in.
Courage, grit, being scrappy, working.
Yeah. Like I, it's pretty crazy like how some people let things get to them, let them stop them, the excuses that they can make. And I think it's a cop out. Like they just want something to point at when typically it's themselves. They have to look themselves in the mirror. And if their business is stagnant or not growing, it's because they're not bringing in new business. At the end of the day, you still got to bring new business.
And look, there's days I got to kick myself in the ass too, because but the difference is like, I might have an off hour, but I don't let it turn into an off 3 hours. 3 days.
Quit for an hour, week, they
one
say.
Week, one month. You know, the period of time that it takes me to turn something around when I get in a funk is quick. Because I'm going to go take action right away. Like, if I'm feeling down or depressed, I'll go empty the dishwasher. Now I just completed something. And that even, like, just completing something and finishing something, like, helps push the needle forward. Like, if you're in a funk. Like, the easiest, go pick up the dog crap in the backyard.
Right.
And complete it.
Right.
Go pull the weeds in the backyard. Even if you have someone that mows your lawn, we have someone that mows our lawn, takes care of our lawn, sprays the weeds. Mm-hmm. Like, there's days I'm in a funk. I see weeds. I'm going to go pull them. I complete the task. And that right there just starts to guide me again to where I need to be.
Right.
Yeah. One thing I learned too. So if you're a millionaire, your value per hour. So if you're making $1 million a month, or I'm sorry,
there's a difference between a millionaire and someone making $1 million.
I'm sorry. So if you're making $1 million in a year, so your value per hour is $500. So correct me if I'm wrong.
Hold on. How are you calculating this? How are you calculating this off of? What are you calculating now?
So if
you said $500.
So if I make $1 million. This year from my company.
So if you gross $1 million,
I can't remember the
million divided by 500. A million divided by 500, that means 2,000 hours. So right now you're just talking about like working. Well, a full time person has like 2,080 hours, I think. Right.
Right.
That they so my point of what I'm saying is your value per hour, right? Like focusing on what moves the needle.
Yeah.
It is fun to do it 24/7, 365 though, not just.
I know. Because I'm trying to remember what that is based on. I can't remember now.
It's closer to the like full-time job, 40 hours a week.
I think so. But that's what you're just saying, like hiring things out, delegating. And I do have a list every day that I work from. The top 3 to 5 things are like what I have to get done. And I think some people are trying to do a billion things, all the things, and they're not doing things that really move the needle.
I haven't done it in a long time, but I used to do that all the time.
Yeah,
I would figure it out on 2,080 hours a year. I would figure it out on how many hours I actually worked.
Justin Prince taught,
how many hours I actually worked, which is like 80 to 90 to 100 and whatever. But then I also would do it 24/7, 365 to figure it out.
I would like to know. Yeah.
So if you do 24/7, 365, you'd take a million, because money never sleeps. A million divided by 24/7 times 365. That'd be $16.30 per hour. No, 24/7. Yeah, per hour. So it'd be $16.30 per hour. But that again, that's 24/7.
That's 24/7.
24/7. Which is how I like to think about it. But what I used to do is I always used to count my cash flow, earned income, 1099 income.
Sure.
And also I would include how much principal I paid down every single month or year. And I would do that all the time to figure it out.
Yep.
And I'm like, dang. Like, and that's like what got me to the point is like I should really never mow my lawn again. And I never did.
Right.
I never have. I haven't mowed my lawn in I don't remember.
Yeah.
I haven't ever mowed my lawn where I live now. Or the last place I lived at, right? But because I'm doing this, I think about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your time is valuable.
Did you have more you were going to go with that?
I was just going to say a lot of people, you know, don't realize like if they're building, like they just don't either prioritize their time well. They don't know what to really be focused on during those hours when they are working their businesses. And so that's just something I wanted to bring up because I really think about like where I spend my time. Well, you know,
Rich Summers, shout out Rich. I know you're going to be on the podcast at some point. I don't know if you listen or not, but, Rich has a post he talks about all the time. If you're the person that gets up on a Saturday morning to go sit in the line at Costco because you're going to save, I don't know how much you save at Costco. I don't know if it's 3 cents or 10 cents or 30 cents, whatever, on gas. He's like, when you actually do the math of sitting in line for 20 minutes or whatever, you're putting your value at $6 an hour, I think is what he says. Yep. Right. But again, most people, like Sarah was just saying, most people don't put a value on their time. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that even if you make $1 million and if you take the 40 hours a week and whatever, where it's $500 an hour, I still think at that point, that's just like a break even point in my mind, because you can never get time back. You can always go make more money.
Right.
So like really you should multiply that by 2 or 3
like
or
that.
4 because like that's just like a break even.
Right.
That's not like for me, like I don't get excited about my masterminds even that we sell out and it's like a 2 day thing. Obviously we have to sell tickets throughout, but like, if it's a $200,000 event for 2 days, people are like, oh, you make $100,000 a day doing that. I'm like, but the thing is, it's earned income. It's 1099 income. I want to take that and convert it and get it in working for me 24/7, 365.
Right.
Because I have to show up there and take 2.5 days of my time and trade it to get the 200.
Mm-hmm. Well, and right? It's not even that. It's how much are you prepping? How much time do you have invested in the right. making the phone calls right. and setting up right. the restaurant or the whatever? So, that's a lot. Yeah. So that's a lot of time.
So if I'm not happy with $200,000 over, let's just say, 36 hours, that's $5,500 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Because right. I'm trading my time. I do not want to trade my time. So then really, like if I take them, if I make $1 million, $3 million, $5 million, whatever it is, right? And divide it by that time period, you need to multiply that number by like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever, how much ever you yeah. value. Like, cause there needs to be more value weighted towards time than money.
Right.
Well said. I agree. Really well
said. People don't think about.
Yeah. That's good.
And I think that the added to that is just because you replace someone mowing your lawn, it's what are you doing with the time that you bought back?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. I've got someone who's mowing my lawn that bought me back an hour, and now I'm not going to do anything with that hour, and I'm going to relax.
This is
okay.
This,
right. You're missing
no.
it now.
This no. is what I mean. This is what I mean, though, by the time. Like, you need to have a multiple on that because time right. is should be weighted. It should be skewed more to the time. Because if you ask the person who's dying at 92 years old, they would pay whatever to go back to be 21,
yeah.
right?
22, 23, 24. Like, they'd pay whatever, 30, whatever. Maybe right. maybe it was like when they mm-hmm. first started having kids, so maybe it'd be like 30. They would pay whatever. You couldn't put, so that's why it's like, why right now? Just because we are like, that's even more reason that there needs to be a multiplier on that time mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm even looking at revamping, you know, kind of where I put my time to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. And that's important too, that self-reflection, where you are putting your time. Kind of reevaluating that as you grow.
Well, and I think the multiplier, I'm thinking about this multiplier thing as well, is because like what I'm doing today as well is not paying me for the future. And so again, like that's another reason to multiply it.
Right.
Because yeah. that is not going to be the same as it is like 3 years from now. And right. if I have that mindset around money that, okay, what I'm doing today, I'm not truly getting paid for. That's also another, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if what I'm saying makes sense, but it needs to be skewed
like
more towards time.
Yeah.
Never getting it back. You can right. always go make. You can always find a way to make $1 million. You can.
Yep.
You can yep. find a way to make $1 million. You can find a way to make 400,000. You can find a way to make another 20.
Yep.
You might find some on the street. You're not going to find any more time on the side of the street
right.
that you can pick up, put in your pocket.
Yeah, like that.
Anyway,
that was good.
Joel, good stuff. What other questions, comments, thoughts?
I guess the only other comment that came up is. I keep hearing that quote in my head where it's most people overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 to 2 years, but drastically underestimate what they can do in 10. And it just, it just re-hits that intentional focus on the right opportunity at the right time for the right amount of time. You give up in 2 years, you give up in a year. That's just not producing what I want. It's just not producing what I want. Yep. It's a time.
And sometimes people quit kind of right before that breakthrough moment or that harvest season too. Mm-hmm. You know, I have seen that too.
I mentioned this podcast quite a bit, the Founders Podcast. They mention one of the most successful oil tycoons ever. Can't remember his name. But he was, I think he started in like 1925 or something like that. Well, he drilled like 25 or 29, he drilled 25 to 29 times, something like that. Oh for, didn't hit one. The very next one was the one that started gushing like 1800 or 18,000. It was some astronomical number, 18,000 barrels a day or something of oil, right? Which like in a matter of, they then put it in perspective, like how long it took to like recoup all the losses from the previous ones, just from that one well that he hit on. And it was like, I don't know, 6 months time or something like that, or less than that. But like, that's the thing, is he could have been done after number 29, not knowing 30
right. that's exactly.
was mm-hmm. the one that was going right. to hit. Mm-hmm. Right. But he kept going and kept going. And there's so many people that don't even get to 2, let alone 29 mm-hmm. or 290
right.
or 390.
Yeah. That's just like in my industry with recruiting or bringing people mm-hmm. on board, like, you know, could be that next person or that person that you need to follow up with or that person that you are connected with. It can change your business for sure. So mm-hmm. That's good. Just like a real estate deal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
we have a thing on the podcast and actually what we're talking about. So I read the question. So what we do on the podcast is we always have the previous guest ask a question to the next guest without knowing who they are.
Okay.
And that's then, cool. So for us, we'll ask from last guests.
Yeah.
We'll ask you their question and then you'll have a question for us to ask the next. And I was reading it before you came in, and I was like, man, I just don't even know how this works. I don't know if this really applies. I'm just like, oh, it doesn't really make sense for what she does. But as we discuss over the last like 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, okay, I'm really interested to see how you're going to answer this, because I think it actually fits a lot better than what I was ready for. So the last guest asks, is there a skilled position that you could hire for right now that would double your income?
Let's see here. I could probably use an assistant, just in general, my own personal assistant. My husband helps me with my business. He helps with all of, like, the back end stuff. It's been a game changer. Anything that I kind of need that I shouldn't spend time on, but I could use somebody that does my social media, more of that stuff, helps me create that content. Once in a while, I'll hire out some of that stuff, but I need either a part-time or full-time assistant to delegate even more, talk about that delegation stuff, which is important. So that'd be it right there.
Yeah.
So it's important to have people to help you and do things that they're good at, pay that money out so I can go and double my business and beyond. Right. So it's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, again, though, the thing is you're saying a part-time, well, it sounds to me like if we take you make $1 million a year,
right?
500, now multiply that by a couple. And then it's like, okay, well really I need 12 assistants. Right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Seriously though. Like there's definitely something still now I should not be doing, you know, spend time on.
Yeah.
So yeah.
What's your question for the next guest?
Let me think here. Man. What's the hardest thing you've ever faced in your career, and how'd you get through it?
I don't think we've had that one yet.
Mm-mm.
Who's the next guest? Dun dun dun.
Can't tell you. He played pro soccer. Just retired.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, played 3 or 4 years. I think he's the next one. Nick's the next one, I think. But
cool. Awesome.
Well, baby sister, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, big brother.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Thanks, you guys, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.